Folks, we are here now with Rab Fulton, who is a proper legendary storyteller based in Galway, but as you'll guess from the accent, he's maybe not quite from Galway itself. So,
Not
hello to
quite.
you, Rab.
Hello, how are you, John?
I'm very
How's it
well.
going?
Thanks
Say
for
hello
asking.
to, and yeah.
So, we are here tonight to get two or three pointers from you as regards what makes a good storytelling evening. What ingredients to you are kind of essential to making it go well? So fill us with your wisdom there, if you please.
Aye. Thanks, John, for asking. I was thinking about this, and a couple of wee pointers I had is I is don't numb your nerves. That's a very important one. As folk I take a wee swally before they go in or whatever, and find each to their own. But I always stay during a show. I don't do that at all. And it's kind of difficult for me because folk keep offering me whiskey because I'm Scottish, or they'll offer me Guinness because I'm Irish, and then they'll give me whiskey and Guinness, and it's very confusing. I have to say no. I stay very focused, and it's just it's kind of respectful to the audience, respectful to myself. This is my thing. Other folk might have their own different way of dealing with nerves and stuff. I like to be nervous. I need that wee bit of fear. It kind of gives me a wee bit of an edge when I'm doing my thing. So that's one of the things is don't numb your nerves. Let you have those nerves. Don't try and get rid of those nerves. Acknowledge them and use the nerves, because the nerves are actually going to be what help you focus, and you can build on it. And if you numb that, I feel you're not going to be your best. That's my thought on that.
And I like what you're saying there. And dare I compare it to it's like a bit like going to the gym. If you don't have a warm up and you try to lift some weights, you need to have your blood pumping. You need to get buzzed, and then it makes it an awful lot. You're in the zone.
It gets you in the zone, because the thing about having nerves is you're very alert to being in this environment surrounded by people wanting you to take them on journeys, and it's all on you, and you've got to be there. So yeah, it's getting the adrenaline going, and you need to be really, yeah, you can't numb that. You can't go in soft. You have to go in focused.
It's
So that's
a great tip. It really is, and I think you were talking about owning your space as another possible pointer. Would that be right?
I mean, okay, so you're going on and you're nervous, and that's fine. And one of the ways to deal with being nervous, but it's also a way of actually getting yourself into the show again. This is just before you take the show, is the minute you walk into a space, it's your space. And I've told stories everywhere outside. I've told them on the Arran Ferry once. I've told them, everywhere, pubs, everywhere, castles, God knows where I've told them. Last week I was telling them in the back garden with some friends, but the minute you tell a story, the space you're in, you own that space. And it's, I know it might sound a wee bit arrogant, but it's just acknowledging it's yours. And one of the things I would be telling folk not to do is don't hurry yourself into it. Acknowledge that space, take your time, walk about it a wee bit, look at it, move a chair about, get yourself comfy, and just get aware of that space, acknowledge that space, and it belongs to you. And the nice thing is, once you're in your comfy space, and once your nerves are kicking in, the lovely thing is your audience out there, they want to hear a story. They want you to be comfortable. They want you to own that space. So you're actually doing them a service, first of all, by staying focused, being nervous, and by owning your space. You're actually doing a service to the audience as much as to yourself. Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense. And I think as well, because of the fact that they are essentially a captive audience, they're stuck there. And effectively, I think you're getting an extra 20% on, say, if they had been watching you on TV, because they're there and they want you to entertain them. And they're prepared to give you a bit of goodwill, which I'm sure you'll agree
Absolutely.
could very quickly dissipate, but they're on your side certainly for the first while.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, obviously, with the shows that my the main shows I did was in the Crane Bar, so the audience would be coming. They knew they were coming for like a 90-minute show, but a lot of them wouldn't know what the show would be. A lot of them wouldn't know what to expect of my stuff. They'd just be having friends bring them along, going, "You have to come." And they wouldn't be sure. And yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah, they're ready for it. They're open to it. And I have had folk walk out before, you know, it's fine. There's nothing you can do about it. It's just not their thing, and that's all right. That's all right as well. If folk can't deal with it, that's fine. Let them
Well,
go.
this is it. I mean, trying to be all things to all people, no, you got to be true to what you're saying.
Yeah.
Too
Yeah.
bad if they don't get it. So, I think the other point you said, and it's I couldn't agree more with you, and it doesn't happen as often as it should, but eye contact is so essential.
Eye contact is amazing what you have to do. I've heard folks say that one of the ways you should be performing is kind of look to the back there and have a wee spot you can focus on. And sure, that can work and I can get you through, but I need to engage my audience, and that means visual. I need to see their facial expressions, and they need to see mine as well. And there is a thing where when you make eye contact with a person, you instantly pull them into your space. So if you've got a crowd, if you've got a crowd of like 70 folk, and they're on their own wee clusters, there'll be a cluster of 10 all kenning each other, there'll be another cluster, there'll be two, there'll be a couple of other folk, they're just by their cell. But if you make eye contact, you bring not just that person, but the people around them into that you really pull it in. And it's also just acknowledging that they are there, you are communicating with them. And it really does, it helps you read the audience as well. But I think the most important part is your way of acknowledging the audience and just kind of, yeah. And I try when I'm on my wee stages, there's a balance to be made. I don't want to be walking up and doing the stage too much, but I want to move about enough that I can actually be looking just the shape of the Crane Bar I used to perform before the pandemic. It's kind of long, so you have to come forward, move a wee bit, and look down the side there and catch the eye of those folk. And then you've got the folk immediately in front of you, you've got to catch their eye as well. And you've got to just keep them all in that moment coming with you as you're telling the stories. This is things that just, you know, will come through practice. You know, I've been telling stories for so many years, and I was brought up surrounded by stories and folk telling stories. So, you know, I've had a good schooling in it, but it's things they practice, you know, but definitely help to keep an eye contact.
It's the old cliche about the windows to the soul, but I think if you look at any department in life, be it romance or the element of trust. So, for example, if a teacher never made eye contact, you know, there's something very shifty about that. Or
Aye.
let's just say a girl doesn't make eye contact, she's not interested. I mean, the eyes have it, as they'd
They
say in
do.
the Houses of
They do.
Parliament. And I certainly know of a barrister, and he had a moment where he made eye contact in the beef tribunal with Charlie Haughey. He had never spoken to Charlie Haughey, and whatever happened in that moment, Charlie then contacted him a few weeks later, and he became his barrister for other affairs. But it was all in the eyes,
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
without which, I mean, we're effectively a blank canvas. It just gives so much away. So that's a really good tip.
I think one of the things we've been told over the pandemic is that the digital world, you know, Zooming and all that, is going to replace. We don't need to worry about the human contact thing. But actually, things like that, like facial expressions, and even the subtle things you can't even you notice, like there's scents and sounds going on there as well. You need that human contact, and one of the first things is the eye contact.
Well, that's a top tip. And I think your final tip might surprise people, but silence sometimes can be golden.
Now, one of the things when you start off in any kind of performance, whether it's music or storytelling or reading or whatever, or theatre, is you want that folk cheering you on, you know? But I can hear my wains down the stairs. They're cheering each other on. But one of the things you learn is that actually stories, there's different kinds of stories that need cheering. There's stories that can be very funny. There's stories that have moments of silence in them. And it's all right to pause in stories and not to have your audience reacting and actually have that silence. And sometimes that silence is, what is the word? Resonant? Is that the word? That kind of, the silence is loud. I'm not sure I'm explaining that, but that sounds can actually be quite scary. It's actually, and it's a different form of respect come from your audience, that a whole audience goes silent at that moment. Nobody talks, nobody claps, nobody cheers, everybody's silent. And just let that moment happen. Then you flash about it, let it happen. And sometimes that happens as well. A story. I'm going to pause for a minute and let the
I know this is interesting. We're talking about silence. So,
and
I know you should have put duct tape on those boyos, but what the hell? It adds to the ambience.
you know what? It's grand because it's funny just watching them when they're telling stories and they're really young, how they've already got that. Just I think again, is if you're brought up in that background, if you're brought up with this kind of thing, you learn it without learning it, you know. But it is, and silence is actually really good. And I'm talking about when I was talking about earlier about owning the space you're in. The silence, you own the silence as well. Let that silence be there for you, and just that's an amazing thing. Sometimes silence is exactly what you need. And coming on for that again, sometimes you can pause in stories. So that's, I mean, pausing in stories, you know, is good as well, you know, because you can pause for stories, or folk can come in with their own laughter or whatever. But some of the stories I tell, they're quieter or they're darker, they're more twisted. Those pauses, nobody's going to speak in them. And you actually have these pools of silence, and they're really lovely to have. And then you'll get that at the end as well. You'll get, you finish, there's going to be silence. And you just, instead of just, you know, nodding and shinny, that says we're over, just didn't say nothing. Hold your wish for a minute and let the silence sit and then do your bow. And then folk can applaud. Because that silence is a nice wee moment of communion between yourself, the stories, the audience, and just that tapping into that thing that is very, very ancient, that goes back, right back in our ancestry, you know, an awareness of how powerful story is for making us connect and for making us wonder, making us laugh, making us cry, making us question, making us just share life and moments and be human. And suddenly you're sharing a silence. It's a very sacred thing. Does that make sense?
I did, and I was trying to figure out the right time to stop that silence. But you know, you're right. In music as well, I've heard not in person, but Beethoven and Vaughan Williams and the likes, they regarded silence as being essential in order to bring out their music. But I have to tell
Absolutely.
you very quickly, the best case of the potency of silence that I can think of now. There was an Irish Svengali called Brendan Bracken, and he was
Mm-hmm.
Churchill's right-hand man. He was from Tipperary, and he was effectively the Minister for Propaganda. All those wartime posters, that's Bracken's work. But Bracken played a blinder because before Churchill became Prime Minister, Lord Halifax was the favourite to succeed.
He was a former
And anyway,
former
Bracken decided, he says, look, play this smart, okay? What's going to happen is you two boys are going to sit down and have your brandy in the gentlemen's club. And, well, all you need to do is shut up Winston, okay? That's all you need to do. Let Halifax speak first. And true enough, sat there, and typical toffs, a little bit of how to break the ice. Halifax was sitting there squirming with that silence. And what do you think his opening remark was? So, old boy, would you like to be prime minister? At which point, at which point, Churchill says, well, if you so wish, yes, I'd very much like to be prime minister. And so, therefore, silence in that case was very much golden because it got exactly what he wanted out. But if you ever listen to an interview, the smart interviewer will shut up because the person being interviewed, chances are they'll blurt something out to stop that silence, and you'll actually get the truth. Now, I know that's slightly different to what you're talking about, but I certainly am saying to
No.
you that silence is amazing.
Aye, silence is amazing. Silence is a great thing. And I think it's what I just in general, it lets us. I mean, I teach at the university in Galway. I teach storytelling narrative. But one of the things I do explore there is memory and landscape. So I also do a workshop, my own private workshops. Talking about, and a lot of that is about getting into nature. And when you are quiet, you can hear the stories in nature because it's absolutely every landscape you go into. First of all, every landscape you go into has folklore and myth tied to it. There's, or even if it's recent events tied to it. But then just the actual bugs and the plants and the rocks and the trees, everything is vibrating with story. And if you're quiet, if you hold your wish and listen, you'll engage with that. So silence is a very powerful thing. Noise can be, even beautiful melodious noise can actually, there's a time for it and a time not to have it. There's a time for holding your wish, being quiet.
But I might have guessed that we would go way over the time. We're up to,
Oh no, dearie, dearie, dearie,
well,
dearie
there is
me.
going to be a shepherd's crook just to your left that is about
Oh, it's got me. Ah, I
to.
tell you, just do the editing and then you can just say, oh, I.
I'll get a Terry Gilliam anvil or a foot to land on your head and squash you. How about that? Yeah.
That sounds fantastic. Oh yeah, that'd be lovely. That'd be great.
Bit of
John,
Monty Python, yeah.
it's been great talking to you, John. It's been nice meeting you finally.
Listen, it's been I mean, we've more or less exposed the fact that this is our first conversation, but the first of many, I'd like to
Oh God,
think.
yes, definitely.
Well, listen, I'm only doing this to wrap it up, and then I'm going to stop the recording. But I
All
think
right.
anyone who's listening will very much appreciate, Rob, your great pointers, and hopefully, who knows, we might get you on at some other stage to say a bit about that that very interesting sounding landscape shop you do. It's not a shop, it's a 6 week
It's not a shop.
workshop,
It's
isn't it?
a 6 week workshop. I had the first one was great, and because people were asking me, but I'm limiting it. Well, a lot of people have been asking me over the years to do it, and when I teach in the university, the last class I was in was 96 folk in it, and it was great, but I was very aware. I had another class in the university, it was like eight folk in it, and I kind of set that as my limit, eight folk. That actually is when you can engage. But that goes into each story, but it's all different. I'm going off on a wee tangent here. Some shows I
Sure.
do, three folk will turn up. That's fine. Three folks is got an energy and an intimacy that, a packed house doesn't have. Whereas a packed house has its own energy as well. Sometimes it's nice when you can't move and you're having to stand on a chair, but that's a great vibe. But sometimes it's nice when you just like, all right, let's just sit at a table. There's only a couple of us here. There's actually something quite nice about small. I think we're all going for small and quiet. That's where I need to go.
Well, that is the perfect note on which we will wrap this up. But listen, Rab, it's been an absolute pleasure. And thank you so much for those great
Thank you,
tips.
John. Thank you very much.